freestanding building just a little bit to the.
Oh, sure, yeah, okay.
The owner gives it to Kay.
Oh, really?
She fills it and just cooks the dinner on a Sunday night, gives it to her, she does it.
Carla, please read the 3 p.m. time, sir.
Item 1607, accept staff report and recommendation and order of council for Gregory Kurahashi Measure 49 claim, PR 06180855.
Chris Durth, Kim Freeman. Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Durth. I'm the Bureau of Planning's Sustainability Planning Manager, and with me today is Kim Freeman from the Bureau of Development Services, and we'll be presenting to you a claim brought by Gregory Kurahashi, Measure 49 claim. It's the last pending Measure 49 claim that we have. The property location for this claim is in southwest Portland in the Ash Creek neighborhood. To summarize for you quickly this claim, it's brought by Gregory Kurahashi, who's here today. It's located at Southwest 50th near Southwest Canterbury Lane. It was submitted in June of 2008 as a Measure 49 claim, subsequent to a submission of a Measure 37 claim, which he submitted in 2006. And because this was pending when Measure 49 was passed, he was able to submit this then as a Measure 49 claim, and it is very similar to his Measure 37 claim. The regulations that he is challenging are three. This regulation, which relates to the disturbance area setback in the Environmental Protection Zone, this regulation having to do with the disturbance area setback from wetlands, water bodies, et cetera, and then a very general challenge to all of the regulations in 33.430, which, as he states, relate to portions of the code limiting construction of driveway utilities and site improvements. And so we'll try to address those in a general sort of way. This is a zoning map of Mr. Kurahashi's property. You can see it in crosshatch there. It is split between an R10P environmental protection zone and an R10C environmental conservation zone. This is an aerial photograph with topographical lines. You can see that the site there in the center is heavily vegetated. You can also see a little bit how steep it is. It would be accessed via Southwest 50th Avenue, which is an undeveloped right-of-way currently. This is a LIDAR map, the city's most recent technology, showing the steepness of the terrain in that area. The bright red is an incline of over 25%, and you can see that Southwest 50th Avenue is is a very steep incline from 10 to over 25%. There's a stream running through the bottom of the property, and the drop for the access on that undeveloped right-of-way on 50th would be over 40 feet on an incline of 10 to 25%. And I would remind you, if you recall from the Snowfer claim a couple of years ago, the Fire Bureau requires that in any right-of-way that's developed over 15%, that any houses be sprinklered, and that they would not allow an incline of over 18%. So it would be quite challenging to access this property via this right of way.
Can you? Maybe I heard that wrong, but I thought you said if the house was on an incline over 20%, it had to be sprinklered, but they wouldn't allow houses.
No, over 15% requires sprinkling.
I see.
15 to 18% and would not allow over 18%.
I see.
For access for fire vehicles, like health and safety vehicles. Also, by way of background, I want to point out to you that Mr. Kurahashi sold a stormwater detention easement to BES in 1987, over 20 years ago, for $12,000. The current value of that would be $23,000. At the time when he was considering selling this easement, the city outlined for him what those that easement would entail. And these four conditions were outlined in a letter to him at that time, stating that in order to build a house, that he would be able to build a house, but these conditions would have to be met. And I'll summarize them very briefly for you, that as long as the city codes are followed in the construction of the house, that the pile bearing depth is adequate for 8 to 10 hour submergence, that the detention volume capacity is not significantly reduced, and that the owner indemnifies and holds harmless the city before against liability. So this is a letter sent to him outlining what would be the requirements before he signed that easement. And then the easement itself states that no private building shall be erected without the prior written consent of the city engineer. However, Mr. Kurahashi may use the easement area for purposes which do not interfere with the city's uses as outlined in the easement. Second, that the easement area shall remain in a natural topographic condition, except that Mr. Kurahashi may remove trees or brush in order to develop a home site. And third, Mr. Kurahashi shall not block natural storm drainage water within or flowing into or out of the easement area. So now I'll progress on to the Measure 49 analysis. And as you recall from previous claims, we look at 10 different criteria outlined in the state statute. The first five here, which I won't go through in detail, we estimate that he has met. His claim does meet these first five. But F, which states one or more land use regulations prohibit establishing a single family dwelling on the property, we conclude that this one is not met, and I'll go into a little more detail on that in a moment, as will Kim. And then G, that the challenge regulation is not exempt under Measure 49, for example, for reasons protecting public health and safety, as we saw under Measure 37, the conditions are almost identical. We conclude that these regulations are exempt for reasons of protecting public health and safety, as you've seen before. And then the next three conditions, we do estimate that this claim has met, H, I, and J. And then finally, K, that the challenge regulation reduced the fair market value of the property according to an appraisal conducted as required by the specific outlined requirements under Measure 49. We don't believe that this condition has been met, and I'll go into a little bit more detail on that as well. And then finally, Measure 49 requires that the highest and best use of the property must have been residential at the time of acquisition. And our real estate appraisal review conducted by PGP Valuation concluded that this condition was not met. So first, I want to very briefly go into why we know that our regulations do not prohibit construction of a single-family residence on this property. And I'd like to let Kim describe the work that she has done with Mr. Kurahashi over the last several years.
Okay, Kim Freeman with Bureau of Development Services. I, among other Bureau of Development Services staff, have been working with Mr. Kurahashi on and off since 2004. Our goal has been to assist him in understanding the environmental review process and in compiling a complete and approvable application meeting the applicable approval criteria. As shown in Exhibit C in the staff report, BDS has identified a potential building envelope within the environmental conservation overlay that's about 1,700 square feet in area. We have also suggested to him modifications to specific development standards that we would be supportive of that would provide additional flexibility in siting a home on this site. In my discussions with Mr. Kurahashi, he raised some concerns about the approvability of modifications and of the environmental review. In response, we've had a lot of conversations about the approval criteria, and I supplied him with multiple approved environmental review applications for a single-family development on similar sites and with similar constraints as his site. In these cases that I provided to him, they had similar conditions, building locations approved closer than 50 feet to a stream, small building footprints ranging from 950 square feet to 1,700 square feet in size, Findings approving modifications to development standards like height adjustments and setback adjustments, and examples of what we typically require for mitigation and plantings, kind of helping him understand exactly what the environmental review process is all about. In conclusion, BDS staff continues to be available and willing to work with Mr. Kurahashi. We're confident that he can assemble an approvable proposal that will meet environmental review and the applicable approval criteria.
So in short, it's our conclusion that a single-family residence has not been prohibited on this property. Second, want to briefly describe for you why we think that the ordinances that have been challenged are exempt under the public health and safety exemptions. This is very similar to what you've seen under Measure 37, under Section 4 of Measure 49. It states that the measure challenges shall not apply to land use regulations which restrict or prohibit activities for the protection of public health and safety. The language is almost identical to 37. And as you recall, for several of the claims we've had in the Fano Creek Basin, the council adopted findings in 1994 when you passed that legislation that 98% of the lands within environmental zones are those most likely to experience natural disasters, including floods, earthquakes, and landslides. And you stated specifically, public health, safety, and welfare will be protected by environmental regulation. And furthermore, the council stated that to reduce the threat to public health, safety, and welfare from erosion, landslides, earthquakes, and flooding, that this ordinance would be necessary. And finally, the council passed an emergency clause which stated that failure to regulate development during the seasonal rains expected through the winter and spring would represent a threat to public health, safety, and welfare. So clearly, it was the intent of council at the time that these environmental protections were for the protection of public health and safety, and we believe are exempt under Measure 49. Third, this appraisal does not meet the requirements of Section 9, Sub 7, which are the appraisal requirements quite specific in the statute. Our real estate reviewer, PGP Valuation, has gone into this in great detail. Their report is in the staff report. I won't go into much detail, but I'll summarize here their conclusions. First, that they state that the claimant's appraisal does not follow the uniform standards of professional appraisal practice. That's specifically called for in the statute. The appraisal does not include an accurate assessment of the highest and best use of the property. And third, the appraisal does not meet all of the requirements of that section of Measure 49 pertaining to appraisals. So in our conclusion, we conclude that the appraisal is insufficient to carry this claim, to support this claim. So finally, in summary, we conclude that the challenged regulations do not prevent construction of a single-family residence. Second, the challenged environmental overlay zone regulations are exempt under Measure 49 because they restrict or prohibit activities for the protection of public health and safety. And third, the appraisal submitted does not meet all of the requirements of Measure 49. And therefore, our recommendation would be to deny Mr. Kurahashi's Measure 49 claim. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you had any.
All right. Go ahead.
No, I just...
Kim, so I understood you to say that you're willing to issue a permit to build a single-family residence. As long as it conforms to...
What we were doing was recommending a developable footprint. Mm-hmm. He would still, under my opinion, he would still need to go through environmental review.
Mm-hmm.
But that was an example to demonstrate this is something that looks approvable, that looks like something we could support through the environmental review to kind of give him some guidance.
Okay.
Including the steep slope? Issue? I mean, there's a buildable lot that doesn't violate fire standards?
Well, this is just looking at the environmental review approval criteria without having gotten into, you know, fire access and that sort of thing. Obviously, those things do come up through the review. And if you look at the memo that's attached to the staff report, we have recommended that Mr. Kurahashi work with the Service Bureaus as well to confirm that all of their requirements are met.
I pointed that out to say that it will be challenging. We don't know whether we can meet the Fire Bureau requirements and PDOT's requirements, but it will certainly be challenging. But Kim is just speaking from the building side.
Right.
Thank you, folks. Mr. Kurahashi, could you please come forward?
She's going to help me because I've never run a PowerPoint myself. Thank you. I can talk for a second here as she can just tell me which
one. Yeah, that's fine.
My name is Gregory Kurahashi of Kurahashi & Associates. Yes, my name is Gregory Kurahashi of Kurahashi & Associates. I'm a civil engineer. I have a company in Beaverton that does civil engineering, surveying, landscape architecture. You might know me more as one of the principals of OTAC Incorporated previously, Othman, Terran, and Kurahashi. I owned about 30% of the firm back in 1993. Since then, I've started my own firm, and this is really a property that I bought at the beginning of my coming to Portland from Oregon State University. And what happened was we developed this property as part of an 18-lot subdivision. It was two lots that were left in the overall project that we had. And when this was all done, and the other things I've done in the city was this improvements near Broadway and Widener. I've also done light rail and analysis as Kurahashi & Associates. Steel Bridge was part of what we did to do the surveying and some of the landscape architecture on that project. And I've also done work on the corridor for the Parks and Recreation District. I've also done work for the Parks and Recreation District at University Park and some of those areas. I just want to tell you that I'm very familiar with the city and I am doing a lot of projects with PDOT, BES, and BDS in terms of viewing things that are in the city. So I realize specifically some of the issues that I am going to have on this property. And during my Measure 37 claim, met with all of the people involved, including these agencies, to make sure that there was a potential for the development of what you see in front of you. What I'd like to do right now is put in the record the information that I brought in. What has happened is this has been postponed. I'm sorry for postponing the hearing here, but when I was first started to look at it, I knew that it was going to take me some time to evaluate what I wanted to do. And Chris was nice enough to postpone it until this date. What was surprising when I looked into it is the submittals that I was given on the 24th indicated I had 15 days to respond, which had been 2 days after the hearing, which didn't make much sense to me at that point in time. And by my making the extension, we now have enough time for me to have responded within the 15 days. So I just want to mention that I'm glad you gave me the 15 days, and it probably helped you to meet your requirements of giving me enough notice. I have a presentation that I want to run through real quickly, and then I also have a written response that I'm going to have to read because there's too much information on it for me to give it. It's 7 pages. It's not going to take that long. I'll stay within the 15 minutes I have. And then I'm going to go ahead and give this to Chris as documentation that can be left in the record. I'm going to talk about all of them, and the only thing that I'm going to pass over to you, if it's legal, is for me to give you a copy of the Armbrust response to the letter that came from the appraisal. And since the drawings on PowerPoint are working, I brought you 10 copies of the actual site plans similar to what's on the drawing, but I won't have to use those. Okay, if I can go quickly through the overall layouts that I have on as sketches. First, you'll see a sketch here of the building area that could be developed if the project was still didn't have a measure modification in terms of the CNP zones. The building area was about 5,442 square feet on a two-level, two-story structure, and met all the requirements, including the setback from the right-of-way, which would have been modified significantly had I known that I could have pulled it forward at that point without having to ask for any more adjustments. The second one is the existing allowances that I can have that I am sure I can get relative to the location of the building and of the roadway that's coming in. The roadway right now seems to be something that I can't build, except for the fact that at 20%, which is where it is right now, and 1 foot contour is not two, I can basically get down to the bottom and have a situation where it is developable, which means I can modify this and make it still work relative to that. It means retaining walls within the public right-of-way, but I always knew that was the case. And near where the property line passes onto my property, it's only a two-foot difference at this scale. So there's not really a high requirement for retaining walls. And I could do most of the grading within the right-of-way without having any problems with additional trees to be removed and still get it to work. So this was always a possibility in terms of getting down there. This is something that I thought about relative to modifying the C zone, which I know that may not be allowed, but would solve my problem. It's the matter of the amount of square footage that I have to develop on the property. And then I had a real wild idea while I was sitting back there that I'll throw out because you might be able to help me do something about it. This land back here is a very, very important environmental zone to the city because it extends and widens the area of the open space and environment. It also has a situation where the actual wetland on the property, which I have defined on the map here, which Chris has a copy of, goes almost to the edge of the C zone, but it's not recorded on your maps. So that means I can actually get to leave it, to come close to it, because it's not defined on your maps and not subject to your normal regulations. But what I thought when I came up and was thinking about is, why don't I just take the right-of-way and somehow work with the neighbors to go ahead and vacate it, build a house right next to the street, and then give the rest of the land to the city? That'll solve everybody's problem, because I wouldn't have to build a long driveway, and we can go ahead and give the remainder of the land to the city as a natural area. And by sharing some of the right-of-way with the adjacent owners in some way, they may be very, very likely to be happy about it because I'm no longer in their backyards. I'm not sure anything can be done about that, but it's something that solved my problems and all the problems that could be done in a very, very constructive way. And the reason I thought about it at all is because I'm in front of the mayor and city council, and there might be something that you could do to benefit everybody and benefit the environment at the same time. Anyway, I'm going now to read through the Measure 49 claim response. This is written the same way and in the same order as the response that the city had for the Measure 49 claims. So I'll just go through it, and some of the references will respectively respond to each one of those. First, my introduction. The Measure 49 claim was meant to fairly treat those Measure 37 claimants who had lots within cities for land impacted by planning changes that affected the value of their land. In my case, a single-family lot was impacted by regulations established to provide environmental protection of the streams and drainages within the city of Portland. My lot is significantly affected by the regulations. When the CNP zones were established, they were essentially removed enough land to make the property economically undevelopable. The diagrams 1 and 2 provide and illustrate the improvement before and after the change in the zoning and the lot size. My property was also subject to a storm drain easement that included a flood zone that I was allowed to build over. My property was unique in that the normal limitation of the plans would have been enough to build a unique house, but then something that actually could be built right next to a street. With a second-story structure, which I can put in based on my calculations, there would be about 1,800 to 1,850 square feet of house. This would be normally enough of a house to build and to economically be affordable. In this case, the long driveway, the issues of the floodplain are creating a problem specifically for me to be able to build such a house. And when I do the analysis, I'm talking about being able to need a much bigger house, something that is really consistent with a neighborhood, somewhere in a neighborhood of 28 to 3,000 square feet. That's 1,000 more than I can build. And also, the potential is on the original plan that I could have put about a 3,400 square foot single story or a 5,400 square foot two-story structure there in the regulations that were there before. So in my case, the lots, and then I went through the possible environmental modifications. I've reviewed the environmental reviews from Kim Freeman on previous, reviewed environmental reviews from Kim Freeman on previous properties and have adjusted the drawings submitted to allow for the decisions allowed on other properties. And based on the statements provided by Kim, your staff has been very open about the likelihood of EN review allowances. Although no assurances can be given, I trust that I would be treated as if no Measure 49 claim was proposed. Zero setback requirements from the right-of-way. It is allowed outright without review. All examples provided were not impacting views from adjacent lots, though. And this is important to understand that when I go through that process, if I ask for something that's not outright, I may be challenged by the neighbors who I'm in their backyards right now, and something that they could challenge effectively because it is a modification that doesn't give me more than just more square footage, which they don't care about, and maybe the city at that point of time won't care about either. The specific requirement that limits the amount of land available is the requirement to place a private water quality planter box on the private property to serve both the private street and the building. That's why the general comment was made at the end, is because I assume that I will be subject to requirements that haven't been resolved yet relative to where I put utilities and what I have to do to meet the requirements of a BDS and a BDS specifically regarding environmental concerns. And I use the 6% rather than the 9% usually used by BDS to evaluate how much land was being taken up by the square footage of the planter box. It may be more than that. And of course, with the long road, I still have that problem. Now, background. I cited three regulations. The first one, 33.430.140C1, gave me about 1,800 square feet, and that's what I have left. 33.430.140B indicated that I would have about 2,225 square feet left on the site, which was the amount that was shown on the plan, but it was the actual full amount. And since then, I've identified with Kim that it's 1,700 square feet that's actually available on the site for development. And based on that, I can build a 18 square foot interior house and a two-car garage. Now, the 33.430, the water quality treatment facility, falls under that designation, and that's why I had to challenge it, because it does affect me. That regulation does affect me. Then, as far as the Measure 49 analysis, below are the conditions. Excuse me, I missed a page. Sorry about that. I went through the zero setback issue that we discussed right now, and what the zero setback does, it gives me an ability to get about an 1,800 square foot house. The side yard setback allowance. Although a reduction of side yard setback of 10 feet has been allowed on several examples provided to 5 feet in previous EN reviews, I believe that this would be opposed by and possibly appealed by the neighbor, who would oppose this because it is in his potential view corridor. And he may win that argument because all it does, again, is give me more square footage on a lot that might be potentially considered large enough, again. Construction setback reduction. The reduction in construction setback that Kim has alluded to me goes from 10 feet by code to 5, and I believe I can get that, and there won't be any problems with that at all. Height modifications. I don't think I can ask for a height modification without expecting to get appealed by my neighbors again. So even though I could try to get 3 stories by going another 4 feet, that's probably all I would need. That would probably never fly with the fact that I was impacting my neighbors. Alternative proposed, I just showed you about a 20-foot modification to the C-zone. I was hoping that could be done to solve my problem, and that would give me enough room to do what I needed to do. As I mentioned before in my first comments, I have already met with the Fire Bureau, BES, and PDOT, including talks with Sun Noble and several other people regarding storm drainage for the site and how I may be able to handle it and how I can take care of the water quality improvements without becoming involved in going ahead and requiring DSL and Corps approvals. The other item that I want to go over is the regulations that that I've been considered as being not exempt for. Am I 15 minutes up already?
In 20 seconds, they will be.
In 20 seconds, okay. Is there any chance I can get another 5?
How about another 2?
Okay. The first one, one or more regulations prohibit establishing single-family residence. Prohibit in Webster Dictionary is to keep off. The result of the regulations is to establish a size of a structure allowed that is too small. Effectively, it keeps development from happening. This prohibits the property from being used as a single-family dwelling economically. The next one, regulation is considered by staff to be exempt. The public health and safety welfare comment is used in almost all your ordinances. You do it all the time. It has become a use in which I have been damaged because of the fact that you're using a comment that usually you use all the time. I state that because all of the reviews that have been done under the EN review have had a geological report and have environmental impacts, environmental concerns that were taken care of at the time by a specific look at each one of the properties. So the public health and safety item here was defined so that you could look into it and make sure that there were no slides and there were no environmental things that couldn't be mitigated for. Regarding the final issue, which is, and I'd like to still submit this for the record, the challenge to the appraisal. The appraisal was done 2 years after it was supposed to be evaluated for. That is because when I went into the city planning department to find out what information I could about the appraisal time, I was led to a group of books that were your books for planning. They're the only information I was told, which was the published information for each one of the years of the documents for planning related to environmental. So I looked at it. I picked a date that seemed to be the date that it would have all been there because your planning documents showed 9/17/97, I believe, on it, 9/12/97, as the when the overall planning documents was posted. I do not know whether or not all the books were on the shelf, but I called upstairs. I said I was a Measure 39 claim person, and I needed to see the documentation available to me to establish the date. So the appraisal was done actually during the time where the appraisal values would have been lower because that's when you had already passed the review process. So the appraisal actually reflects a low appraisal for what was actually should have been included in the documents. And then I have a statement from Brad Armbrust regarding the amount of things that were involved in his evaluation. He has indicated that he did the right thing, and I don't know anything about appraisal, so I can't say whether or not it did or not. The other issue that's really important to me is the length of this roadway and the improvements were not looked at by the person evaluating the C-zones and P-zones. They didn't know about it. They couldn't. There's trees all over.
Sir, your Thank you. Up. Thank you. Is there anyone to sign up to testify on this issue?
No one else signed up.
So I actually wanted to ask you a question. I'm trying to sort through all of the information to identify specifically what you want to do that you're being told you can't do. I understand you understand that you can build a house. Is the issue for you, you want to build a bigger house than the 1,700 square foot they're telling you can build?
Yes.
And how much bigger? 3,000 square feet?
About 3,000 square feet, 2,800 to 3,000 square feet.
And do I can I summarize your argument as saying that the that you have concluded that identifying this as a issue with respect to the public health and safety, you do not agree with because you think the term is overused?
Yes. Very much so, because I've always seen it in everything I've ever read.
Are you aware of the house that just slid down the hill and crashed into two other houses here about 2 months ago?
Yes, I've heard of it.
No, sorry?
Yes, I have. And it's specific to the location where those are, too. The issue regarding geologic hazards are real specific not only to the slope, groundwater conditions, and a lot of other features that are involved. In the specific case where I am, the city of Portland was proposing a detention facility, I think they might have built it, to flood the whole area with water up to 120 feet. That almost is my full property. If you put that much water at the base of a hill, you have to be pretty sure that it's not going to slide. Because by putting that much water for a long period of time and then releasing it, you're actually causing the possibility of floods. So this property must have been looked at by the city of Portland BES very significantly in terms of putting a detention facility there and making it underneath the house that I have.
So you're in your testimony, I just want to check to make sure that I understand the basic sort of point or thrust of your testimony. In your testimony, you're saying that you can't make money on a 1,700-foot square house at the end of a long and expensive driveway to access it. Is that correct?
I can't. I cannot get a loan to build a house.
It's not economically viable. Okay. You're arguing or not arguing how we should interpret and apply the C and P zones. You are saying that the C and P zones are geologic, based on your geologic evaluation, that they're safe, but you want to build in the zones.
The CNP zones cover the property right now.
Okay.
I was given the right to build on a portion of the C zone, and the C zone amount that's there did not evaluate in its process, because that's big enough for a normal house anyway.
Okay.
It is. The length of the fact that I had an unimproved road in front of the site that I'd have to improve, that it would take water quality facilities that I have to build on the property for it, and finally, it didn't evaluate the fact that I have to put piles on my site to do it. And that's because the overall amount is the amount necessary to build a house next to a road.
Okay.
That's amount of the economic advantage that we have. Is if I was next to a road, this would not be an issue.
Thank you. I'm interested in hearing staff's response.
Would you like me to respond to the questions that you were asking, Mr. Karashi?
It's the will of council. I'd be interested in sort of your response to his points.
Okay. Specifically, what we were showing on the exhibit was a 1,700 square foot building footprint. That doesn't mean just a one-story structure. Obviously, it could be a two-story structure, which gets them closer to 3,000 square feet or greater. As far as I heard a lot of different points from Mr. Karashi regarding like a street vacation process or any ideas like that, we would be more than happy and willing to work with him and explore those different options that are available to him. As far as modifying setbacks and height as part of his development proposal, we would encourage him to talk with his neighbors, see what their reaction would be before the application comes in the door, see whether they are amenable to it or not. But I guess my main point is we're here to keep working with him with these different ideas that he has, and we're available and we're willing to be helpful. Any other specific points that you guys?
So, well, when you talked about the vacation, that was the idea that Mr. Kurihashi had sort of today that he was suggesting about possibly ending
right.
up donating some of the land. And okay.
Right.
So that's still something that could be pursued.
We could yeah. definitely take a look at it. Obviously, I just heard about it today, so I'd have to look at the feasibility of it, talk with transportation, but
does anything what you've heard today substantially impact your analysis of the case?
No, I don't think so. We all know with steeply sloping sites, a geotechnical report will be part of the submittal application. And then I think all of the other points we addressed in our staff report and discussion earlier.
Thank you.
And yeah, just to answer that, Commissioner, in my view, did not address the three major points that we made as to why this Measure 49 claim is not a valid claim. We think it may very well have a developable piece of property here, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the Measure 49 claim.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
No.
Motion
to adopt staff recommendation.
Second.
There's been a motion to deny the claim and adopt the staff report in order as the council's decision. I've had a second. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, Kim, thank you for your analysis. And I would say to Mr. Kurihashi that that I am having responsibility for the Bureau of Development Services. I know that those were very sincere remarks about helping you work through the process. The staff never waives a regulation, but they certainly try to figure out how to make it work best for the customer. So thank you, Kim, for those remarks. They were very appropriate. And I vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I also appreciate, Mr. Kurihashi, your arguments, but I don't think they were responsive to the basic reasons why we're denying your claim. I do think I'm impressed with the BDS's extreme willingness to help you figure out a way to do something with your property here in terms of building a house. So I think that's an offer you should continue to work with them on. So I vote aye.
Potter?
Aye. Adjourned.